Good morning and welcome to the Lakers Lowdown. I'm Anthony Irwin. Today on the show, well, tonight the Lakers try to even the series on the road and still earn that split in Denver that they kind of sort of really need here. Otherwise, it is definitely going seven. You have in the NBA some rumblings that I find very interesting within the Lakers' own Pacific Division. There is a lot of whining coming out of Denver for no real reason. And like they seem like almost upset at anybody asking like why they won game one against the Lakers and what they might be doing to combat the adjustment that we saw from Darvin Ham and the Lakers at the end of game two. There's a lot to talk about here as we prepare for a huge game two in the Western Conference Finals. Let's start with the game that is tonight, right? By the time you guys are listening to this, the Lakers are going to be hours from from tipping off in game two in Denver. LeBron said going into the season, it was an interesting quote that really kind of caught me off guard. But LeBron mentioned, hey, sometimes that second game at altitude makes a little bit more sense, makes it a little easier to play there because you have now lived in that kind of situation or atmosphere, whatever, for a prolonged period of time. You know, now in this case would be going on 72 hours rather than landing, playing, and trying to get used to that lack of oxygen in real time, right, as you were going through it. It's an interesting theory. I haven't really seen it really backed up in terms of like what doctors per se have said about guys playing at altitude or whatever. But it's the kind of thing that a team's leader says to get his guys ready for the potential that, you know, they don't win game one, right? That all isn't lost if they don't win game one, that they can kind of rebound and get ready for game two. That it struck me in several regards as a really interesting statement from LeBron that, again, I don't even know if it's necessarily true, but it's the kind of thing that like a competitor would convince himself of in the likelihood or in the event that the Lakers would have lost and eventually did lose game one. The other part of this, too, is I still contend, and I'm biased here, so I have to cop to that, but I still contend that the Lakers took the best that Denver is going to get over the course of this series. They shot, like, it's one thing to just, like, generate really good looks, and Denver did a really good job of that, too, but it's one thing to generate a ton of good looks and knock down all of your open looks en route to a comfortable win, right? But Denver hit a lot of really tough shots and made all of the open ones too. And it was still a one possession game late in that game. So and you can say, well, the Lakers shot really well too, and the Lakers got a lot of free throws in the second half, and the Lakers had a bunch of things go in their direction too. And sure, yeah, like I've said with Trudell, and like I said with Harrison, like there are two ends of the spectrum here, and it's just a matter of like where within that spectrum you find yourself, right? A lot of my friends at DNVR, way the hell over here, right? And then, you know, a lot of Laker fans, way the hell over here. So it's just a matter of trying to figure out where on that spectrum you are going to land. So to me, though, as always, I think that the reality is somewhere in the middle. And to me, I do think that Lakers took that haymaker from Denver, took a few of them, frankly, over the course of the game. And yeah, got knocked down a couple times, but we're like still standing at the end of, you know, say like the second or third round. And I asked Trudell on my show earlier today, what he thought he saw from the, or what he felt coming out of the locker room in terms of confidence. And he said that, you know, there, it felt like, you know, the guys in there felt like they could win this. Not that they will, or not, nothing, you know, no crazy overconfidence, no Dylan Brooks kind of situation, but certainly like a quiet confidence is kind of how it sounded like he described it. And that makes sense. You know, the Lakers, do I think that Rui Hachimura is going to stop Nikola Jokic? Obviously not, right? Like that's kind of crazy. But do I think that the Lakers could go to that as a pitch that they can throw defensively? Did I think that the Lakers could, you know, mix that in with more LeBron on Jokic, which we didn't really see very much of, and AD on Jokic, which we saw a lot of, and you know, a lot more shading off of the likes of Aaron Gordon? Yeah, I think that's something that the Lakers can continue to adjust with. And then offensively, I was really struck, especially early in this game, how little the Lakers designed stuff to go specifically at Nikola Jokic defense, with him on defense. And, you know, part of me is like, well, you know, you don't want to throw every single one of your pitches, every single one of your punches in the first round of what is going to be a really long fight, it feels like. But also, like in the second half, when the Lakers were really trying to get back into it, they did a lot more of that stuff. And again, like they were just as successful offensively as they were defensively against them. That's how you get back into a 20-point game. So, yeah, there's a lot to like about that second half. And, you know, again, it just depends on your perspective. From the Nuggets standpoint, all that matters, you know, the conversation ender is, well, that's cute. You guys found something to work with here. We have one game to nothing right now. Totally objectively true, right? But I also felt like, you know, the Nuggets, that was one of the first times, especially in their house, that they got punched in the mouth. And, you know, how they respond to that is going to be really interesting. And you know, when you look at, and we're going to talk about Michael Malone's, as he likes to correct people with, but I'm going to talk about Mikey's corrections here, or you know, when asked about some of the adjustments that the Lakers made over the course of that game, and what felt like bravado from him in response to some of those questions. That really struck me as, oh, is he a little compensating going on there? Something a little beyond the actual quotes. And again, might be me being a homer. Probably is me being a homer, but worth taking note of. So shouts to my former colleagues over at Silver Screen Roll. This time, Jacob was the one who threw together all of the quotes from Denver. And yeah, let's just kind of go through them here. So Harrison Wynn tweets out, Harrison Wynn of DNVR. Bruce Brown says Denver isn't too worried about adjusting to the Rui Hachimura matchup on Nikola Jokic that the Lakers went to in game one. Overall, the Nuggets aren't concerned. They've seen that adjustment made against them many times throughout the regular season and playoffs. Michael Porter Jr. on the Lakers' adjustment to put Rui Hachimura on Nikola Jokic. I don't think that will be an issue for us next game. We know how to counter that. Michael Malone, much is being made of them putting Rui Hachimura on Nikola Jokic, like we've never seen that before. Okay. All right. They have. They've seen iterations of that, I would imagine. Like they have probably seen some version of the opposing team, you know, having their center play help side defense versus and putting a smaller player on Jokic, especially a smaller, sturdier player on Jokic. And they have found ways to kind of deal with that maybe they were more successful with than they were in those games than they were against the Lakers when they kind of saw that for the first time on the fly with the Lakers. My one follow-up question, if I could ask one, is, okay, yeah, you've dealt with that with centers like maybe a Plumlee here and there or a Gobert or Zubats or whatever, and and you know, you were able to deal with it that, you know, however you felt like you needed to deal with it. And for the most part, like, again, there is no, like, there's nothing that the Lakers are going to do to Nikola Jokic that renders him unplayable on offense, right? He's a two-time MVP. Had he not sulked his way through the last couple months or so of the season, very easily could have been a three-time MVP. This is a great, 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 great player who, that caliber of player is going to figure you out at some point, no matter what you throw at them. But still, I do think, though, that the difference between Denver seeing that from other teams and now seeing it here from the Lakers is that that help side defender here is Anthony Davis, right? It's the pterodactyl. It's the help defender to end all help defenders. And, yeah, maybe we see some counter. Maybe I would imagine they're going to handle it a little bit better than they did in the second half. You couldn't handle it much worse based on what we saw there, right? You almost lost a 20-point lead. You were an ill-fated LeBron three-point pull-up jumper from squandering the entirety of that lead. So, yeah, I think that was, if I was a Nuggets fan, I'd be like, that, you know, please tell me you have something. Please give me my blankie. And I think that's the thing to watch defensively here for the Lakers in game two, and the thing to watch offensively for the Nuggets here in game two. That said, I think there are tweaks that you can add to that if you're the Lakers. You can, you know, the Lakers were, you know, kind of not completely ignoring Aaron Gordon as a shooter. I think we're maybe a game or two away from that. I think one thing that they're probably thinking about doing here pretty soon too is with AD, like where they're like understanding where they're going to send help from and understanding like how to better respond to that designed and designated help. I mean, there are still things that the Lakers can add to that tweak in their approach defensively. And then offensively, I thought that, like, one, the Lakers getting more stops in the second half allows them to get out in transition, and they look significantly better out there in transition. They also looked awful in transition against the Nuggets. There was a lot of just kind of meandering back on defense. And, you know, if the Lakers, it's already difficult enough to deal with the offensive presence that is Nikola Jokic and the rest of that Denver group. But if you're just going to, like, every time you turn the ball over or you miss a shot, just kind of dawdle back on defense and give up that many transition points, you're really limiting your margin for errors. So, you know, I think the two kind of major tweaks here is continuing to add to the different defenses that you throw in the half court at Jokic, and also not being such a disaster in transition, you know, in the event that you turn the ball over or you don't score it yourself and force them to take the ball out of the basket. Shit, there were some plays where, you know, the Nuggets took the ball out of the basket, still ran up the Lakers' back as they were getting back on defense, and still got stuff at the rim before the defense was set. So, do I think in any real way that the Lakers played their best defensive game start to finish? Absolutely not. Do I think, though, that, like, even if the Lakers do play their best defensive game, that the Nuggets still might get one over on them because they're just that good offensively? Yeah, they're really effing good. The other part of this too, before we move on, we're getting a lot of this, and this is from Brendan Vogt. Bruce Brown on the Nuggets being doubted. Nobody watches us. That's why. So apparently there is more context to this question, that it was asked in a more general sense. That why was it that, like, why were the Suns favored going into that series? Why were the Suns favored going into the playoffs at, you know, in terms of coming out of the playoffs? There's nothing so rich as a number one overall seed feeling like they aren't getting properly respected. Here's the thing, though. You want more respect? Y'all should have tried more in the back half of the season. Like, they just kind of sulked around. And you know, again, it costs Jokic that third consecutive MVP. You want more respect? Like, go out and earn it. Like, this is sounds a lot like the Phoenix Suns, where, you know, they're getting angry about some of the questions that they had to answer last year in the playoffs as they were getting ready to go to the finals eventually, right? And it's like, look, you guys have you're a good core, really good team. I really enjoy watching you play. But this idea that the one seed is getting too much doubt, a little weird to me. You talk about like nobody watching you. Look at your owner for an explanation on that, as they have been blacked out of their own market for, you know, basically the entirety of the Nikola Jokic era. And like, lastly, you haven't done shit. Like, you're doubted because you haven't won a title. You're doubted. And look, there are reasons that you didn't. You had the Jamal Murray injury. You had multiple back surgeries on MPJ. You lost in the bubble to a really good Lakers team and all of that stuff. But like, to demand essentially that we all bow down to the grand presence that is the 2023 Denver Nuggets, like, win first, and then you can carry yourself that way. Like, win a championship, and then carry yourself that way. You were really good in the regular season when you actually really wanted to be really good. Thing is, though, when more people started tuning into the NBA, as, you know, teams started vying for playoff positioning, for the playoffs themselves, as you get more marquee games over the second half of the season, you guys tuned out. That's not an us problem. You know, that's not my problem. That was a you decision. And like, yeah, look, ESPN, TNT does a shit job when it comes to presenting their actual TV partner or their corporate partners here in the NBA, right? You have TNT making a mockery and having a giant joke every year that, like, Chuck doesn't know who plays for whom, right? You have ESPN, where you had, you know, one of their major voices in Mike Greenberg asking before game 5 of the second round of the playoffs if the Lakers should sit their starters, right? The funny thing about not getting covered nationally is then you're going to get cut. Like, at some point, you're going to get your wish. If your team is good, you're going to get your wish. If the Nuggets win a championship next year, they are going to have a lot more attention on them heading into, or if they win a championship this year, next year, they're going to have a lot more attention on them. That's how this works. But the thing about this, I'm a Vikings fan, right? I'm a Vikings fan. I'm a Dodgers fan. I'm a Lakers fan. I'm a UCLA football fan, right? And with the Lakers and the Dodgers, they are constantly talking points, A-block talking points on all of these shows, right? Because they are needle movers. And, you know, you have a lot of dumb talking points about both of those teams from those national shows, because all of those national opinion makers, there's no way to be educated well enough to offer up super nuanced, well thought out opinions on those teams if you have to pay attention to not just, like, in like Stephen A's case, he's paying attention not just to, like, all of the NBA, but also apparently all of the NFL, and basically any, like, MMA I saw, like, he gets into too. Like, yeah, when the thing from Nuggets fans' perspective here that I find kind of funny is that, because again, I experienced this with the Vikings and with UCLA football, where if the Vikings start playing well, you're like, okay, this means that they're going to start getting talked about on all of these shows. And then I listen to some of these shows, less so in the NFL, because I think their coverage of the sport is significantly better. But like college football, I think, is a better example, where I'm like, I wait to hear what these kind of national presences think about UCLA. And then they'll make points that, like, don't actually align with what UCLA has actually done that year. And I get annoyed because it's like, no, you don't know what... enough about this team to actually say those things about the team that I care about. And I think like eventually that's where Nuggets fans who are annoyed at how little their team gets covered are going to land next year, where their team, after their team gets covered a little bit more. It's like, no. Can we go back to you not saying shit, dumb shit about my team? Like, I guarantee you that's going to be the talking point coming out of that fan base next year. So yeah, I don't know. Like some of the stuff about like nobody believes in this and all this shit. Like you're a one seed. You're a one seed in the stronger conference. Your presence in the Western Conference, at one point they were like lapping the Western Conference, and that was why Jokic could have, I think, had he kept on playing, won himself that third straight MVP. And yeah, like if you want that respect, one, you have to earn it, and then two, be careful what you ask for, because eventually those national presences are going to start saying really dumb stuff about your team, because that's the only way these national presences know how to cover these things. It's soundbite USA, right? It's not, you don't go to First Take for nuanced and super analytical discussions about all of these teams. No, you're going to get Stephen A saying like the next time that next year, if the Nuggets win a championship, you're going to get Stephen A. Smith going on there after like a 5-game losing streak, saying that Nikola Jokic needs to retire. Like, you want that attention? Like, saying this as a Lakers fan who always has that attention, have at it, bud. Enjoy. All right, last kind of thing here before we head out and get ready for what is going to be another knockdown, dragout game, I feel like, between the Lakers and the Nuggets. I want to kind of expand and talk about some kind of league-wide stuff that I find really interesting. So Shams Charania reports that Bob Myers and the Warriors are kind of bracing for a breakup. Okay. All right. You have Adrian Wojnarowski reporting that Michael Winger, current general manager of the Clippers, is interviewing with the Washington Wizards. All right. You had a report that the Phoenix Suns are interested in Ty Lue, and that it's somewhat unlikely, as Ty Lue is currently employed. But not, I mean, like if a rumor is so pervasive behind the scenes that a currently employed coach is the preferred choice of a different team, there's a lot of smoke there, if not an outright flame. So that's kind of interesting, right? Lawrence Frank, I think current either vice or actual president of basketball operations for the Clippers. Not much has happened on his watch, right? So maybe he makes his way out too. Bob Myers is a UCLA guy. He is an LA guy. He is also probably pretty sick of having to abide this two timeline process that Warriors ownership has kind of forced on him. And he's maybe thinking that, and he's also probably looking at like Steph, Clay, and Draymond. Steph still looks great, and that's maybe all that necessarily matters, but maybe Draymond's starting to lose a step. Clay looks really bad, you know, compared to what you expect out of him in that LA, in the Lakers series. Maybe he's starting to look at that core and be like, do I want to get out before either I have to trade some of those guys or this thing just ends around me? And look, if I had my wishes, the Lakers currently employ Rob Pelinka as their vice president of basketball operations and general manager. Do I think Bob Myers would leave the Warriors to go to the Lakers and be, you know, Rob Pelinka's underling? Probably not. But I can wish. That said, look, Steve Ballmer is about to open up this brand new facility in Inglewood. He has spent billions with a B and plural, not just on buying the team, but building that facility, building out their infrastructure. Like, you ask anybody around the league in terms of like which team has the most resources that are currently like, or con, con, constantly pumped into the organization, the Clippers are one of the first and consistently one of the highest listed names that you're going to find in the NBA. Ballmer is a nutcase. You watch him there on the sideline. He wants nothing more. It looks like during timeouts, he just like, they lay a thing. They don't actually do this. Don't sue me. But it looks like they lay out like a Tony Montana-sized line of cocaine that he just like scoops into his body, because you look at him and he's just like a nutcase there during those games. So if you were to ask me like outcome here, I think there's a lot of dominoes that are pointing in the direction of Bob Myers, architect of the Golden State Warriors dynasty, maybe sort of being tempted to come home, at home being LA, and getting offered that president of basketball operations job where he doesn't have to worry about Kirk Lacob. He doesn't have to worry about Joe Lacob demanding that they build for the future while they still have a top five player in Steph Curry. He just gets away from that, potentially gets to hit the reset button here, or like add to a Clippers roster on the fly. That still, like, if we ever arrive at a point where Paul George and Kawhi Leonard survive through a season, like, maybe he just gets lucky and he shows up for that year. So yeah, I would love to talk to Aaron about this, and eventually we will. I will, but yeah, this is a series of rumors that you cannot help but link together. So keep an eye on all of it. All right, that is going to do it here for this episode of the Lakers Lowdown podcast. Apologies for not having a lowdown yesterday. That was a result of finding out as I was getting ready to record the lowdown. Tradell hit me up and goes, "Hey, we've been going back and forth trying to figure out in both of our schedules how to work out an appearance." He goes, "Hey, you got time tomorrow?" Absolutely. So I went ahead and used that lowdown slot on that show with Mike Tradell of Spectrum and of the LFR pod. So that was a fun conversation that I hope you check out. Also, by the time you guys are listening to this, the episode of yesterday's lounge with Harrison and me also is in this feed. You're going to want to check that out as well. And then tonight after the game, you have Raj and me recapping however that game goes, plus either Aaron later tonight to do that with us, or he and I will talk on Friday. So yeah, lots of stuff to get you through all of this as we prepare to, you know, try to survive this Denver Nuggets series. So until all of that, and until I talk to you guys next, I'm Anthony Irwin saying have a good one, everybody.